God, please set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Especially let me, allow me to let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your new truth. God, help me carry your message tonight. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, today we're going to cover fear, and I have a fear because it's a big crowd that I'll piss everybody off and nobody will come back, so I'll get over it. I'm going to do the best I can, God willing. We're going to cover fear. We've covered on the fourth step up to the page 67, and we've covered it. I've been doing this, 12 years now? So we've recently covered the four-step instructions on resentment. If you're new and you'd like to hear me teach the big book, it's on experiencethebigbook.org. I did the resentment cheat sheet last week. People thought it was helpful. That's thought number 46 on the site. Now we're going to look at fear, which is the second thing we inventory in step four. And I just wrote some thoughts about fear. These apply to me. I'm not going to generalize it to you or anyone else. But I was thinking about fear and alcoholism and what is my basic problem. And my problem is that I lived in a scary world my whole life. It was a scary world. And I would go through the day with a pair of glasses and my life, and I would see the world through self-centered eyes. And I would watch to see where or what my instincts are being threatened. What's out there that's scaring me? And we're going to talk about that. I gave you the handout on the instincts of life, and I'm going to go over this again. But when I'm in self, and I'm in self-centered, I'm constantly in fear. Now, what were my fears? Is someone judging me? Anybody worry about that? Am I failing in something or being seen to be a failure? Have I done something wrong in my mind or in reality, and am I going to get caught? Is someone or something going to take away something or someone I need to be happy, what I think I need to be happy? And am I not going to get what I want? And I was a victim of the delusion from as early as I can remember that I would have rest, the word rest, W-R-E-S-T, satisfaction, happiness out of life if I managed well. And that became my higher power. I didn't realize it. I was thinking today, when I was 7 years old, I went to day camp in the summer. And they had a swim meet on Friday. And they had the competition for the 7-year-olds and the 8-year-olds. And I wanted to win so my parents would be proud of me. So they lined us up. I can remember as if it was happy way. They lined us all up and they said, okay. And they said, go, and I forgot to go. So when I got home that evening, I told my father I'd won. Why did I do that? I wonder now, but I wanted approval. I want somebody to say, you're okay. 7 years old. Now, the other thing I have that I don't know if any of you have, but I would go through the day in my life as if I was being filmed. And it was going to be shown on CNN that night how Michael was a loser, what I did wrong, how I wasn't measuring up, how... And everybody would see it, whether it was real or imagined in my head. So if something happened during the day, it was as if they were filming it, and everybody would know. Now, I don't know if maybe I need to be admitted to psych ward, but maybe you can unsee that. And basically, am I good enough? Am I good enough just being Michael, or do I have to have things to make me feel good? And I wasn't good enough just being me. I wanted my mother to love me more, be respected. I grew up in a Jewish community in Baltimore, and we were not wealthy at all. And the way to be recognized as like the savior was to become a doctor. So I realized, like at 9 years old, that if I could become a doctor, I would be okay. I think it worked out. I think it was a good doctor. But it was initially because I was going to get approval. And then everybody would think I'm okay. I don't know if you can relate to that. Fear. I talked about it last Sunday. I was sitting waiting, going over the material for the meeting, and I had this fear that the coronavirus is going to spread through the world and the stock market's going to crash. And I wasn't worried about everybody dying in the world, of course, or any of my relatives or anybody, but that it would cause the stock market crash and I'll lose all my money and I'll end up homeless. Now, I did that in about 30 seconds. Can any alcoholic relate to that? So I said the fear prayer. I knew it was ridiculous. See, I know when I'm being ridiculous now, but that doesn't mean I don't get the ridiculous thoughts. So I said, God, remove the fear and direct my attention to how I should be. And clearly, I heard this voice say, be on time at the meeting tonight. You see, it's not real. It's not there. And so I focused my life all the time on being good enough, looking good, and I became dependent on how people think or how I think they see me. Am I getting enough recognition? Am I getting criticized? Are people talking about me in a negative way? Any of you ever go to work and you wonder what they're talking about? You know, whether they're talking about you or not, or did you screw up? So I was like a ping pong ball, just bouncing around my whole life, trying to get approval, making sure everybody like me. Did you ever try to get somebody to like you who you didn't like so you could get approval? So what happens? I activate all my character defects, the left-hand side of the card. And he says in the 12 and 12, fear, self-centered fear, activates all my defects. It made me dishonest, frightened, inconsiderate, prideful, greedy, luster, angry, envy, impatient, and tolerant. You see how that works? It triggers it. Because we're afraid. And so my self-centeredness is, and we read about it in the big book, was the root of my troubles. Anybody agree with that? But it says something there, my troubles were of my own making, and they arose out of me. And I was an example of self-will run riot. I was self-centered, trying the best I could to get approval. And I would create problems in my mind or in my relationships. And it activated all my character defects. So I said, like road rage, how is that fear? Well, how could somebody cut in front of me? I'm Michael the Magnificent. I mean, how could they do that? And I'm important. And I have to get to work. I have something to do. Anybody go to the grocery store and the person in front has all the coupons and, you know, they're waiting, that they know that I have things to do. Yeah, alcoholics can relate to that. Normal people just think we're crazy at work. I had this thing that if I wasn't overwhelmingly busy, I was a failure. So they wouldn't show me the schedule. Because if I had an opening, I'd say, oh my God, I have an opening today. And I would think the second floor is saying, loser, he's a loser. It seemed real to me. It was a fear. I know it sounds ridiculous. And so I stopped looking at the schedule. I would worry if I wasn't getting enough new patients. So one day, I didn't have a new patient. So they knew I was going to be upset. So they didn't want to tell me. So I said, oh, well, no new patient. So I said, well, this is a ridiculous fear, and it doesn't matter, isn't that? And they said, well, don't worry, doctor. It'll work out. So at 4 o'clock, when I had 4 new patients, that they called for me to see, they said, boy, it's too bad you didn't have a new patient today, doctor. You see how ridiculous we are? Now, 2 months ago, people weren't worried about coronavirus. They didn't know it existed. They were worried about something else. So I was in a constant state of being uneasy. And the only time I've ever been okay is when I work the steps and I'm working with someone else and I feel okay. And that comes from being with God. And so the solution for what I was telling you about is to take me out of whatever this self-centered state is and be right now with God. Can any of you relate to that? Now, the problem when you live in a state of fear, and how's that related to alcoholism, is alcohol provided a sense of ease and comfort. Anybody relate to that? And we would seek it, and we would seek it so we could be okay. And anything that's powerful, whenever we're anxious or irritable, we're going to seek it. Our mind's going to say, I need to get a drink or get a drug. Now, what happens to alcoholics is that when that thought gets in your brain, and you know that'll work for you to relieve this irritable, restless, discontented feeling, when your mind says, Michael, you need it, I can't say no to it. I can't say no to it. So the solution is to find a way to live where when I'm irritable, restless, discontent, I go to a different solution. And what's worked for me is God, the 12 steps. They take me to God right now so I can see things differently. I could say last Sunday, well, that's just ridiculous, Michael. You're not going to waste any time about it. Please don't tell anybody about it. It's so stupid. But, you know, that's the deal. I've wasted so much time on fear, and I don't have to be afraid anymore. What a great way to live. And it says, if we are right with God in step three and we let him direct us, one of the guarantees is we will begin to outgrow fear. Isn't that powerful? Doesn't say we won't have it. Now, step 10, which we just covered, says, during the day I watch for fear. When it crops up, what do? Yes, God, it wants to remove it because it's not real. So now we're going to look at fear in the big book. I hope that was helpful. Just some thoughts about how it's affected my life.
Thank you.
And I want to tell you, when I came in, for if you're new, I was full of fear. You couldn't have measured it. New people, I really try to understand how afraid we are when we come in here, because we're living sober now and we don't have alcohol and drugs. Now, why do we look at fear in our four step? What are we trying to do in the four step? We're trying to be free of the things that are blocking me from God so he can direct me. I can't be in the now if I'm in the past, which is resentment, right? And resentment is anger. When I'm angry, I'm disturbed and I'm not with God. So I'm going to stay disturbed till I let go of the anger and let God change the way I see it. We went through anger. We went through the prayers on page 66-67 to be free of anger. And then we looked at our mistakes last week in column 4 and page 67. And now when we see people who we're angry at, hopefully we won't be afraid of them, because we can see how we harm them and we're willing to make amends. So it's a whole change. You come in here and you have a list of people you want to execute. Then when you do the resentment inventory, you realize you owe them amends, that you harmed them and they didn't really do what I thought they did. Or if they did it, it was to retaliate for things I've done. And that's very humbling. The purpose of the fourth step is to humble us to see how we need God. We need God all the time. And so it says, notice that the word fear on page 67 is bracketed along the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. So if you turn to page 65, he gave us an example of anger, the first three columns. Now, it's important to understand that when somebody bothers you and you don't like them, it's because they activate a fear. If you don't get a fear activated, you won't get upset by them. Now, why do I say that? Because it says we asked ourselves why we're angry on the bottom of page 64. And it says, in most cases, we found our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships were hurt or threatened. So whenever I am threatened, I get angry. Now, that's what this chart is all about. I got this from the Joe and Charlie PDF years ago. And I think if there's one thing that's really important for new people and for old people to know, it's what this chart means, at least what it means for me. If you notice, self is in a circle here. And at the top, you have the three instincts of life. We all have a sex instinct. Why or we wouldn't have more people? And it's God-given and it's good. We all have a security instinct or we wouldn't have been able to kill the mastodon. And we need to have buildings to live in so we don't freeze to death, and we need certain things in order to live. We have emotional needs to make us feel secure, and we have ambitions to fulfill our security instinct. Everybody see that? None of these are bad. And we have a social instinct. We want to be accepted and belong. We want to be recognized sometimes with prestige, with people to feel good about us. Self-esteem is what we think ourselves, high or low. Pride is an excessive or unjustified opinion of oneself, either positive or negative. Personal relationships are relationships with human being, and ambitions, my plans to gain acceptance, power, recognition. Now, pride in itself is not bad if you're proud of doing good things for service for others. But if I'm in self, and I'm the center of my world, not God, then what I need to satisfy my sex instincts becomes something that I have to have. If anybody threatens it, I get angry at them. See, he hated Mr. Brown because he gave attention to his wife. He was afraid of losing a wife, but this guy was really sick. He had a mistress. You get it? And she was afraid that she'd tell the wife of the mistress, so he's mad at Mr. Brown for telling his wife, and then he's worried Mr. Brown's going to get his job because he's not showing up to work because he's drunk. And that threatens his material, his emotional, his sex instinct, his companionship's prestige. Now, I can think, say for myself, my self-esteem was very low when I came in here. And it was low, and I tried to satisfy that by seeking approval out there. And I don't know why my self-esteem was low, but my theory is because I was basing my self-esteem on me and not God. And I was bracing my self-worth on human beings and not on my relationship with the Lord. And I think one thing AA has done for me is it's raised my self-esteem, because my esteem's based on how I'm serving God and others, and not on what I have or what people think of me. Now, pride in AA is a killer, because it's always excessified and unjustified. You see, we have low self-esteem, we feel inferior, but we have excessive pride, so we feel omnipotent. Get that? We're an egomaniac with an inferiority complex, so people don't have a chance with us. My pride is always being threatened because it's excessive. I'm Michael the Magnificent. How can they treat me this way? And so when we're in self, these instincts, we watch for this. And if anybody violates any of this and threatens it, I get angry at them. So when you do your fourth step and they do the third column, this is what the third column is all about. And it's all based on fear from being in self. You see that? So if you get upset with somebody today, there's a fear behind it. You don't think they like you. You ever get mad at somebody who you think looks at you wrong? Because you're afraid. So we don't want to live on self. We want to put God in the center of our life, and then we're not threatened like we were. That's what the steps are all about. So it says here, this short word on page 67 somehow touches about every aspect of my life. Now, if I don't figure out how to be free of fear and deal with fear in a positive way, nothing's going to change in my life. And it says, it's an evil and corroding thread. Now, my wife does cross stitch. She makes cross stitch things. She has a cross stitch site. So she'll have a beautiful cross stitch. Well, let's say they made a tapestry of Michael Hurwitz's life. And they put on the wall this huge tapestry that somebody made of my whole life. And it's throughout the whole thing is this evil and corroding thread that ruined it. So when you look back at your fourth step and you look at your life and the things you did and the things that happened, it's all because fear. It could have been beautiful, but because of fear and being self-centered, we created this tapestry, and it has a lot of blemishes. Anybody have that? And if you did, when you do your fourth step, you feel bad. But I don't feel bad. I wish I could have done it different, but I couldn't because I was running the show. And I was the manager and not God. So I had no power to do different. But I don't want to do it anymore. So it says, it set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune. Anybody see that? Anybody try to fix a fear by manipulating some situation or someone? But we felt we'd never deserve it. So these circumstances would happen, and then we'd say how unfair it was. So we couldn't see how fear set us in motion to take actions, what's called things caused me misfortune. And it says somewhere that our problems are of our own making, and they arise out of ourselves. But it says also, sometimes people hurt us, seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past, I made decisions based on self, which put me in a position to be hurt and to hurt others. So when I had fear, I made decisions based on the fear that caused people to do things to me. That's on page 62. And then I couldn't see how I set the ball rolling. So it says, but didn't we ourselves, on page 67, set the ball rolling? And what really starts the ball rolling is being self-centered, right? And being in self, it triggers the fear. Now, they're going to tell us that on the next page. But I'm giving you a hint, preview. Circumstances, the result of fear setting in motion, brought me misfortune. I think that could be this whole, summarize your life, right? So it said, we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. What did it steal? My peace of mind. It stole my relationship with God. It stole my life. How much time did I waste in fear? Did any of you ever like sit somewhere or sometime and you're just sitting and you're wondering why you're uneasy because you don't know what you need to worry about? I remember I was at the Final Four in 1999. And I was sitting there watching Duke play. I didn't know they were going to lose because then I would have been in real fear. But I'm watching it, and they're starting the game, and I felt so uneasy. I didn't know. What was the fear that I was missing? I don't know. Maybe I'm sicker than others. But it's there. It's been there my whole life. So it says, we reviewed our fears thoroughly. So you're going to make a list of fears, and you're going to put them on paper. That's not very hard. And it says, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. Now, when you do your four step with your sponsor, or I don't know how you'll do it, but if you do it according to the big book, when you do your resentment, you're going to see your fears with each resentment. Fear of not being good enough, fear of taking something away. You know, you'll list them. And you'll see those fears, and you'll see them, and it's going to say, why did we have these fears? And I remember reading this line. I didn't know much. But when I read the big book, I think it was the first time I saw this line, and it hit me like a brick. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed me? Wow. It failed me. I tried so hard, but I was relying on self. It didn't work. My whole life, it was the story of my whole life. Self-reliance failed me. And if I keep living on self-reliance, I'm going to continue to fail. So it says self-reliance was good. And self-reliance, you see why it's going to fail, because you're relying on self to satisfy all your instincts of life, and it's never going to work. They're never going to be satisfied at the level that you want them to. So it says, some of us once had great confidence, self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Now, here's the next two paragraphs. If it's okay, I'd like to cover them tonight. We may not have a lot of discussion. Is that all right? All right, good, because I'm going to do it anyway. All right. But I'm not afraid of what you're going to think, you see? All right, now these two paragraphs really have changed my life. And I've studied them, and I try to live them. It says, perhaps there's a better way. This is their testimony to you, if you're new. This is the better way they had to live than self-reliance. Now, I want to tell you, I believe what they say because it's true for me. So if you want to recover from alcoholism, here's what you need to do. You need to be on a different basis of living, trusting and relying upon God. It's that simple. You can't rely on yourself anymore. You have to rely and trust on God. Now, it's easy to say. What's the hardest thing about trusting God? Trusting God. It's hard to do. Now, how do you learn to trust God? We talked about that faith without works is dead. I did some talks with that. As you do the steps, as you ask God to change you and change the way you see things, and he does it, you trust him. And you know to go to, I know when I have fear now, I just go right to God. And I ask him to take it away, and he'll go away. I know when I'm angry, I say, God, save you from being angry. He'll take it away. It's guaranteed. The basis of trusting and reliability. So you learn to trust God through the working the steps. You don't wake up one day and say, I'm an alcoholic. I've lived on self-reliance my whole life. I'm going to trust you today, God. Let's have a great day. It's not going to work. Because you have to learn through action how to trust God and how learn through actions how to change the way you see and react to things. And you do that with God. It says we trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. That's really an interesting statement. I trusted my finite self all the time. Why wouldn't I trust infinite God? We read every night, day, a meeting, God has all power, right? May you find him now, right? Why? Because alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. Well, it's not just alcohol, it's my life. And so I have to trust infinite God rather than finite self. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. What is our purpose? It says, I'm in the world, that's my purpose, to play the role he assigns. Not the role Michael assigns. When I'm relying on self, I assign my role, and your role, and everybody's role, but my job is just to have the role God assigns me. So you can say, well, what's the role God assigns you today? Are you a husband? Be a good husband. Are you a dad? Be a good dad. Are you a son? Be a good dad. Are you an AA? Be a good AA member. If you go to work, be kind and loving and tolerant to everybody at work and do a good job. I mean, it's not complicated to look at the role. And that ties in with page 77, which you don't have to turn to. But it says, what is our real purpose? Our real purpose in AA is to maximally fit myself to be of service to God and others and to play the role he assigns. It also says in the third step, 163, that if I rely on God and stay close to him, he will give me everything I need. I mean, that's, the AA book is pretty simple. Rely on God, stay close to him, work the steps so that you can be with him, and then see if your life doesn't change. Just to the extent, now here's the deal, just to the extent that I do as I would think he would have me. And I, how do I do that? Through prayer and meditation. And humbly rely on him. That means get out of the way. Understand that I'm broken. I need God's power all the time. Rely on him and do as he would have me. Then here's the greatest promise in the big book. Does he enable me to match calamity with serenity? Think about it. Nothing can happen that I can't handle with serenity. And if I have serenity, I don't have fear. So if I stay close to God and the extent that I let him do through me what he would have us do, I can handle calamity with serenity. Now, why was that important to me? Well, I was about 6 years in the program and had really started studying the book and working the steps and really gotten into it when they told me my son died. And I got the call at 7:30 in the morning. And it was the ER. And they said, Doctor, your son just died. And I was at the bottom of the stairs. I can still see it. And I had the phone, and I could see this line in the big book. And it told me what I had to do. That I do just as God would have me and humbly rely on him, I'll be able to get through this with serenity. I could see it. Now, who put that in my mind? That was God. Now, why did that happen? Because I'd really done a lot of work at seeking God and working the steps and doing the deal. And so I think that's the greatest promise. And then they go, and further on, they expound on it. It says, we never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. A lot of people come up to me, they say, you talk about God too much. I don't like your meeting. You know, blah, blah, blah. I say, fine. Don't come back. Depending upon our Creator, we don't apologize for that. Why? Because we depended upon ourselves and we made a complete mess of our lives. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. Remember, you have to surrender to win. And it's the strength we get is from giving up. When I stopped running the show and gave up completely, I remember that moment when I got down on my knees and said, I'm done. I felt better. I can't explain it. And the more I do that, the better I feel. Every morning I say, wretched man that I am, God help me. I'm broken. God help me today. Humbled. When we're humbled and we understand the strength in God. And faith means courage. So if you have courage, you can deal with anything. But it's faith in God, not in me. Does that make sense? All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. Now this is the goal of the steps. The goal of the steps is to give you faith and courage and trust in God. And then when you don't like the way something appears, you won't go buy a drink. You'll go to God. It'll work better, I guarantee you. Mm-hmm. You won't need a drug. You won't need a drink because you'll go to God and you feel better with God than you ever did when you were trying to solve that problem with outside things. We never apologize for God. Instead, here's the deal. I let him demonstrate through me what he can do. Now, I let him demonstrate through me what he can do, but I have to do his will. I can't just sit there all day and say, I'm going to let you do it today, God. I have to take the actions. And I have to play the role he assigns. And to just the extent that I would think he would have me. See how it's all tied together? And we're going to study that on page... In step 11, we've already covered that in step 10 on Wednesday night. Instead, we let him demonstrate through me what he can do. Does that sound like a channel of God's peace in St. Francis' prayer? I'm going to be a channel of God's peace. I'm going to let God demonstrate through me what he can do. And now, if you're wondering what a vision of God's will is for you or what his role is, look at the St. Francis' prayer. What are you going to bring into all your days? Love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, joy. You're going to comfort rather than comforted, understand than be understood, love to be loved. That's God's will for me. And it says by self-forgetting, I'm going to find. And so it says we ask him, here's the fear prayer. There's four prayers for removal of anger, 167. And here's the fear prayer. You get afraid. We ask in the big book means prayer, and it's ask in the, remember these people were studied the Bible, who were in the Oxford group. Ask means a petition to God that we expect will be fulfilled. We're not asking hoping, we ask expecting. And I ask him to remove my fear. Isn't that good? But here's the thing you have to remember. And God, direct my attention to what you would have me be, not do. Now, why is it be and not do? I wasn't there when they wrote this. Wish I had been. But the being causes the doing. Now, if I be love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, joy, what am I going to do? What are my actions going to be? And if I be hateful and resentful and intolerant, what's my actions going to be? I heard the speaker once. It made me stop. I heard this thing, and it said, the only thing lacking in every situation is the love I don't bring into it. Now think about it. You're irritated with someone, and you go, and you're going to talk to them. What are you going to get back? Irritation. Now if somebody's irritated you, you don't have to give it back now. You can be loving, kind, patient, tolerant, considerate. And then eventually, they may see it differently. But you don't have to be, you have a barrier now between you and reacting to that. So it's going to be what you be does. And that's the other thing in AA. We talk about what we're doing, but it's how we be that determines what we do. And it says, at once we commence to outgrow fear. Don't get rid of it. But when it's there, we have a power and tools now to see it as truth. It's false evidence appears real. It's all in the future. It doesn't exist in the now. Now, there's no way for me to sit in my chair downstairs and worry about a fear in the future if I'm in the now. It's not possible. So when I get a worry in the future, I just say, it's not happening right now. I don't go through a lot with God. God knows I need to. I say, God, I'm taking, just take rid of this. It's not happening. And you know why I do that? Because I wasted so much of my life in fear. It was such a waste of time. And it's unpleasant. Anybody like to be afraid? So I hope this was helpful. I'm sorry I went a little long tonight. But next week we're going to do the second step proposition exercise on fear. If you've never done it, it'll change your life. The second step proposition is God, everything or nothing. What is our choice to be? And if we choose God is nothing, we have fear. And it's an exercise on how you can look at your life and your fears and be able to say the prayers and deal with fear in a positive way. So if you join us next Sunday, I'll have the handouts for that. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr.